Hello, everybody, and welcome to 3-Point Perspective, the podcast about illustration, how to do it, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact in the world with your art. I'm Jake Parker.
I'm Lee White.
And I'm Will Terry, and all three of us are professional illustrators, and we've been working for about the last 25 years. We've worked with just about every major publisher in the business, and together we've got about 50 books between us, and we've all taught illustration at universities.
Yep. Each week we come at you with a different topic, and today we're going to fight about it. I've been promised.
We have no idea what the topic is today.
Hey,
because it's Will's topic, and he never divulges that.
I like you guys going in fresh. I think I get it. The other thing is I can manipulate you more easily that way.
Mm.
And I've actually had people compliment me on that.
On your manipulation skills?
On not telling you what the topic is.
All right.
And that could be a manipulation right there.
If the listeners like it, we'll try it out.
Hey, are we allowed to talk about the fact that you're moving next week?
Yeah, that's fine. We could talk about that.
Heads up. We can't do this anymore.
Whoa. That's right. Will, for those listening only, Will just tossed from one camera to the next his stuffed animal.
Whoa. You're a better catch than I am, but
I
threw it way over my head.
Yeah, I threw it wrong. So if you, it's fine if you guys like listening to this on whatever podcast you're doing, but we have been posting these videos or these podcasts on YouTube. So that's another way you guys could listen to it. And you can see our beautiful faces while we talk. But yeah, I'm moving next week down to Arizona for a host of reasons, but mainly just our family needed a climate change. So we're moving down there. And the
house moving is, because of climate change?
Oh,
okay.
if it was because of climate change, I'd be moving north, not south.
Do you want to give everybody your new address?
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
I will be moving to Gilbert, Arizona. So if you live in Gilbert, Arizona, we might have to have an artist lunch or something. And I'd like to meet the artists in the community.
What do you think the percentage of listeners are who know where Gilbert, Arizona is?
That is a good question.
I'm going to put it in the 10% range.
10%.
And that 10% happens to be in Arizona right now.
How about this?
Outside of Arizona, no one knows where that is.
Phoenix, Arizona area is where I'm moving to.
The greater Phoenix area?
Yeah. I guarantee, though, there's a bunch of people on the East Coast that have no idea which square state is Arizona. You know?
So we have you in Tennessee, Lee, mm-hmm. and we'll have you in Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have Preston in Idaho. Everyone else is pretty much here.
Yep. We'll just talk about the entirety of the SVS team there.
Yeah.
Preston, we haven't ever really mentioned Preston on the podcast, but he helps us with marketing stuff. He works with Lisa on the marketing side of things.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Enough chit chat. Let's get down to the topic.
This is going to be the episode where we talk about how to price your illustration work.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I'm not ready.
We're going to argue about how to price.
All right. How do you price, Will Terry?
You price it right. Price has to be right. If the price is right, you win a washer and a dryer. And that probably goes right over the heads of a lot of the younger.
I don't know. That show's still going.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Who's the host now? I think it's Drew Carey.
Drew Carey.
Hmm.
I tell you, that'd be a sweet gig. You just show up every day for an hour, 2 hours, whatever. You don't have to even like read a script or prepare or anything. You just show up and...
That's exactly what we're doing right now. So.
Yeah, except he's getting paid.
Oh, right. Subtle difference. Speaking of how to price your work... We're not getting paid at all.
Okay. So the reason I came up with this topic is because I didn't come up with this topic. This is a question that I'm sure we all get asked, but I know I get emails all the time. I've just got this job and they'll describe the job a little bit, and then they'll say, how much should I charge? They're asking me for advice. It's the exact same thing that I did when I got out of school and got my first assignments. And when I say job, I'm meaning like freelance assignment for illustration, yeah, or either, you know, editorial for magazines or for children's books or for a children's magazine, or you know, design work or a self-published book or any kind of thing where someone says, I'd like to hire you to make art for this. How much would you charge me? And then panic sets in and you go, I don't know. You're obviously afraid to charge too little, and you're also afraid to charge too much. And so I get asked, how much should I charge? Like there's a magic number. And if I just tell them, they'll be able to tell the client and everything will just work out and be happy. And
yeah, I think you're right on there with the all the stresses that come along with doing this, how to price your work. Cause I mean, I've been doing this forever too, like 20 years now. And I'm still, there's still times where I'm just like, geez, you know, am I at that level where I can raise it to the next level yet? Or do I still stick with the rate that I've been asking?
Right.
But here's, can I just say how I do it?
Oh yeah.
And then we'll move.
I want you guys, give you guys enough rope to hang yourselves so that I can come in here and,
okay.
Can I add my number one pet peeve before about this topic before we get into the too many details?
Yes.
Number one pet peeve is how many people won't talk about this topic. Yeah. That's why we're all in the dark. That's why nobody knows what to charge or what's going on, is because we attach. It's strange because we do art, we think of ourselves as the art, and then we attach our own value to the amount. So if we make too much, we don't want to seem like we're bragging. If we don't make enough, we don't want to make it seem like we have no value. And so everybody just keeps mums the word, and people mention it vaguely. Oh, I got paid a little. I got paid a lot. That's what I hear from people. Mm-hmm. I never know I want to know what the exact number is, because what's a little to you might be a lot to me, or vice versa. But nobody talks about it. And so it's just true.
And do they talk about it in school?
It's so abstract. I mean, they never get detail.
That's true, because I did a blog post a couple months ago about how much money I've been making at conventions, like exact numbers. I made this amount at this show, this amount at this show, and also showing like they've been declining, those numbers declining. And I was just like, basically presenting, should I quit doing conventions? Should I change it up? Whatever. I just wanted to spark a conversation, but I don't think that conversation would have happened. And there was lots of sort of Twitter activity happening about it. I got invited on another podcast, the One Fantastic Week podcast, to talk about it. I don't think any of that would have happened had I not. Oh, there's another podcast, Comic Lab, had me on to talk about it as well. And so none of that would have happened had I not listed specific numbers, which people aren't so used to seeing. So, So I think it's in the power is in the hands of the people paying for the work. If we as artists aren't open about the numbers, basically, because if they can keep us in the dark, then they can they can pretty much set the floor, the ground floor, for what the payment should be. And this was actually a huge problem in the animation industry. I was part of a class action lawsuit because for a period of 5 or 6 years, the animation studios were charged with price fixing. Or is that the word? Basically, they were
colluding. Yeah.
Yeah, they're colluding and basically saying, like, do not charge this much or more for
that's collusion
for particular artists, right? And so the whole animation industry was kind of like stunted because of this, because it was started by the Pixar head CEO, Ed Catmull. So he was sort of the ringleader of it, and he called Sony, he called Disney, he called Blue Sky, all these, you know, DreamWorks, and said, this is what we're going to charge for animators, this is what we're going to pay for art department, this is what we're going to pay for editing, for storyboards, all that. Don't offer anything more than that. And so once this was uncovered, you know, they were sued, obviously, and the basically the workers won, and I got several checks in the mail.
Nice.
For how much? For all the,
I guess we're talking numbers now, aren't we?
You have to now.
Oh, yeah.
I got, so because I was working in that window, it was, I don't know if it was 5 or 10 years, but I had a job five years of that window, and I was at one of the studios involved with it. So I got like $15,000 check.
God, that's so, you know, sweet.
Wow.
Yeah, it was nice, but I would have liked to have had that money at the time. Instead of, you know, 10 years later or whatever.
Right. And it could have been probably more than that, depending on your value as an artist. If they've capped it, probably, yeah, kept people artificially low for a number of years, you know what I mean? So it's probably was actually worth more than that. But
right. So that pet peeve aside, let's talk about how we actually price the work. So the thing you want to do as an artist is figure out what your day rate is. And that's how, if you're doing any sort of work for hire, illustration work or concept artwork or anything like that, they're going to ask, what's your day rate? And that is basically in a 6 to 8 hour day of work, how much would you pay for the work that you do in that time? And it gets really confusing. It gets a little bit messy, of course, because everyone works at different speeds and everyone's at a different level of their work, and people can crank out more work or less work. But basically I tell my, the people who are working with me, hey, I have this particular day rate, and for that day rate, I can give you X amount of drawings. And I usually know if that's the right amount, because they'll come back and say, oh, our budget can't handle that. Can we go down a little bit? And then we negotiate and we come to where their budget can handle, right? And that usually makes me feel good, because then I know I'm getting into a spot where I know, based on probably other artists that they're working with and the budget, that a typical budget that they've set for the project, that if we're negotiating to a particular spot, at least I'm getting like a fair wage. The worst is when you say, here's my day rate, and you get this amount of art for that, and they come back and say, oh, okay, no problem. And then I know, shoot, there was probably a little bit in there.
Okay, so
ask for double.
So two things. One, yeah, what is your day rate? And two, does it ever change?
Yeah, it does change based on the industry that I'm working for and the kind of work that I'm doing. So I base my day rate off of when I worked for Blue Sky, and they hired me to do feature animation concept art as freelance before I worked for them full time. They just established it and said, here is the rate. It's $500 a day. It's $2,500 a week. And are you willing to do that? And prior to that, I had been doing maybe $200 a day. $250 a day. So when they came to me with that, I was like, sweet, this is double what I'm used to normally charging. And since then, I've raised it 20%. I try to ask for 20% more than that, depending on the job.
What's that, like $650, something like that?
Yes. And then, yeah, but then sometimes I'll get a job and they'll just say, listen, our budget is $400 a day. Or our budget is $250 a day. And then it's up to me to decide, is it worth it for me to take on that job? Do I need that money? Do I have the time to do it? And so you just kind of negotiate. Sometimes you can actually just say, how about $2,000 for the entire job? And they don't know how many days, you know. Basically, you figure out what the scope of the job is. It's going to be 20 illustrations or 10 concept designs. And you could say, okay, I can do this whole job for $2,000, and then if you need any revisions, it'll, on top of that, it'll be, you know, $500 a day or something like that, you know. And that is basically how I negotiate a rate for it. But there's back and forth, and it's okay to do that. And don't be afraid of negotiating, and don't be afraid to ask what you feel like you're worth, and they'll let you know if you're worth that or not. And really, these people, you have to think that the person on the other side, many times, they just have a set budget that they're allowed to use. Mm-hmm. And there might be wiggle room in there. They might realize, oh, if I we're not spending as much on this part of the project, so we can put more money towards you. Or they might just be like, this really is how much money we have, and if you're available and if you want to do it, let us know.
Yeah, and those negotiations are easy because it's basically a take it or leave it, right? I mean, a lot of children's books are like that from mid to big size publishers will say, you know, they'll ask you if you're available, and then they'll say, this is what we have in our budget. Does that work for you? And mm-hmm. you can ask for more, but often the answer that I've gotten a lot of times is that's really all we have to work with on this. That's our budget, you know? Mm-hmm. And in those cases, that's, like I said, super easy. But what we're talking about in this podcast is not that. It's the how much would you charge? And you have to throw out, you're responsible to throw out the first number.
Well, I want to address what Jake was just saying and clarify, I guess. What Jake's talking about is more so geared for entertainment design rates for that day rate. I hate the day rate.
Me too. We both hate.
The day rate sucks. And the reason for that, the day rate sucks for illustrators, and I think the day rate sucks for everybody, is the amount you make is actually less the better you get.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody's somebody's slow, it takes them 2 days. Right. Yeah. You don't get a benefit from being better and gaining experience unless the day rate goes up accordingly. So, you know, that's an inherent flaw. And the other thing,
you're right. It props up the person who's entering, who's not that great, because it's like, well, the studio says, well, this is what we normally pay. Oh, you normally pay everyone this, no matter how good they are. It doesn't, you're right. It doesn't take into consideration your ability.
Right, mm-hmm. right. And, it also kind of affects how people in illustration bill. Sometimes they come up with that day rate by taking their bills. I hear this a lot, like figure out how much you have to make and then divide that by your monthly, you know, by 31 or divide it by 365 for a year, and then you'll get your day rate and you know exactly how much to charge. It's just the worst system for coming up with a value on illustration, because the only thing you're attaching the value to is how much money you have to pay out in bills. And so I was actually arguing with somebody on the SVS forum about that, because if you take that to its logical conclusion, well, if I buy a Porsche, does my day rate now go up? I mean, my value hasn't gone up as an illustrator, right. But mm-hmm. but because my expenses went up.
In Jake's defense, it's a reality that he's had to deal with working in that industry too.
Right. Yeah. And so it's not for like entertainment. For entertainment. but I just want everybody to understand, like, as illustrators, the day rate is terrible, but for entertainment, I think it's more standard. And a lot of the reason for that is because illustrators' value is in usage, and mm-hmm. in entertainment, you mm-hmm. don't own the product. And so they can standardize the rates a little bit more because you're just giving work that's not going to be yours. You're not going to own the copyright and all that. Our value is in the copyright, and our value mm-hmm. is in the usage. And so once you understand that, everything changes.
Right. Right. Yeah. So yeah, you're right. I was speaking specifically for the entertainment side, because when you're figuring out how much to charge for a book cover, you know, my first question is how many copies are being printed, you know, how many, and where is this being sold? What's the cover price?
Mm-hmm.
All those kind of things go into it, because if there's printing 10,000 copies, you know, that's different than if they're printing 2,000 copies. And you know that if they're printing 10,000, they're probably going to make, you know, $500,000 off this book, gross, not net. And if they're printing 2,000, you know, it could be 100,000 that they're making off of it. And so if they're making more money, you as an illustrator should be making more money as well.
Mm-hmm. Why?
It's just, it's, why not? Why not, Will?
Why? Wait. Why should you make more? And I'm playing devil's advocate. I agree with you, but like, I've never heard that verbalized. Like, just because someone else is, you know, it's their project. I'm trying to think the way someone else might think, you know?
Well, let me ask you this. If you're making more money as printing 10,000 books, shouldn't the person printing those books make more money because they're charging you for each book? Right? So there, everybody else is making more money. Why shouldn't the illustrator make more money?
But does a company give an accountant a raise just because the company shows higher profits one year?
Well, the difference is we're basically renting the image to the company. And so for the bigger usage, for the bigger rent, then comes a bigger fee. That's the only reason.
The better answer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because you're helping them to, you're helping make the product.
You're not right. Well, that's where I was going next.
Yeah. Okay.
And I should just clarify, if you guys are out there and you haven't really heard this verbalized, that we charge by usage. One of the examples that I give in the classroom when I'm explaining this concept is I put up an image of like a smiley face or some just simple design, whatever, and then a full a picture of like one of those like a Civil War battle scene or something where there's like, you know, 500 people in there, and I ask people, which would you charge more for doing the illustration? Of course they always pick the Civil War one because that would take, you know, months to paint that. And then I say, no, this one could be worth more, and let's talk about why the smiley face could be worth more, and depending on where it's used. And it's so great because in the news this week, this exact issue came up with who's the basketball player for the Toronto Raptors? I know you guys follow NBA very closely.
Michael Jordan.
LeBron James.
No, hold on. I got to look it up because
Charles Barkley.
So this guy, I know his name. Everybody's probably yelling at the top of their lungs while they listen
basketball,
to this.
That's because, with the two field goals at the either end of the
oblong ball with the two white stripes.
Hold on, I gotta look him up because what is his name? He's like Leonard, I think. It's Kawhi Leonard, I guess is his name.
I was gonna say that.
Yeah. Anyway, he's like number three or four on in terms of value on the NBA right now. He's kicking some major booty. Well, he was with Nike before, and he drew a logo. He basically traced his hand. And then he had like a couple of like his jersey number and a year number or something like that. Just a couple scribbles inside this hand. And he was using that as a logo. Well, Nike used that as part of the logo on their shoes, but they didn't buy that image from him outright. And so he left Nike and went over to Adidas. And then he wants to use the logo that he made, that handprint with the thing, at Adidas and use it for all kinds of stuff. That's kind of his personal little mark. We're venturing into logo territory, but it's the same concept with illustration. And so it's a clumsy mark. It's not a great drawing. It's not something that took a ton of time, but that mark right now is worth billions of dollars because of its usage. So it's an interesting thing when the quality isn't super high, but the usage has value.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I just wanted to explain that if people haven't heard kind of why there's value there and how we charge as illustrators. That's kind of a way to make that concrete.
Hopefully. So how does that apply to the individual illustrator when they're trying to price their work? Can they factor that in, or does that happen after something?
Absolutely. Like if you're starting to price something, the first thing that I ask for, so you get a call from a agency and they say, hey, we want to use an illustration. The first question I ask, just like Jake was saying, is like, how many copies is going to be made? What region is it going to be used? How long is it going to be used? So duration, location, and all these other factors. And so if they say, you know, if they come back and say, oh, we got, you know, some low amount, let's say $500, that's what we got. And we want all these, we want worldwide rights and we're going to own it forever and all this stuff. That's where I start the negotiation point. I say, you know, for $500, I can't give you all this stuff, but for $500, I can give you a local regional usage for 6 months. And that's how we started. And most of the time, clients will overestimate what they need an illustration for. So you just kind of start walking them through this process. They're like, you know, so you can have it locally for 6 months. Oh, no, no, we're going to need it at least nationwide, and we're going to need it for a year. Oh, okay, well, let's take that $500 and bump it up to $2,000. And now they're on the same page, because now you're talking the same language. They're upping what the usage value is.
Okay. I want to drill down on that. So this is, let's say this is a real thing that happened to you, right? This happened yesterday. Now, Lee White can say, no, 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 let's bump it up to 2,000, because Lee White is established. You have a name. You're not just out of school. You're not afraid, because the wolves aren't chomping at your heels, because you've got a house. Your wife works. You've got other income sources.
Sure.
And you don't need their $500 or their $2,000. But let's take it to a student who's just out of school, who is trying to pay off their student loans, who's trying to, you know, just make their rent payment on their apartment, whose car is dying and is about to go in the shop. Okay, so now I could have $500, or I could risk that $500 and say, can we bump it up? And risk, and in my mind, as a student, because I remember feeling like this, thinking, well, they might just totally say, forget about it. And now I lost the $500. So this is the conversation that I was hoping to have.
Yeah.
Is how do you, how does Lee White tell the student, you should be getting $2,000, when the student is scared to even ask for it? Because they need that money to pay, just to make their rent.
Sure, sure. Well, I got a couple of answers there. First of all, if you are in a position where you can't say no, you are in big trouble. That's my first line of reasoning there, is like, you need something, whether that's driving for Uber or waiting tables or whatever you're going to do. If you're in a position where you can't say no, I mean, obviously, that's just an obvious rule of negotiation. If you have to take whatever they throw out there, then there's no real reason to have the conversation. You have to take whatever they want. But the way that I tell them to pitch the work so the work doesn't get devalued is, say the job should be $2,000, but the client's saying they only have $500 and the student needs that $500. I tell them to go ahead and bill it as a $2,000 job with a line item that says new client discount, $1,500. And that way, at least on the invoice, it is still a $2,000 job. The client isn't now thinking, oh, cool, I can hire for $500 every time. That way you can dig yourself out of that hole. When the client calls you again, it's not like, well, we paid you $500 last time, I want it again.
That's really a great idea.
I've never thought of that. I think, too, the other thing is, I've never heard of anybody losing a job because they... you know, they had a hard time like negotiating. Like, if you said, your premise there, Will, like, they're worried that they're going to lose the job if they ask for more money.
Well, but also it makes you look kind of silly to say, you know, I think people, if you say, if you're willing to do it for $500, but you ask for $3,000 or something, and they say, no, all we have is $500, and you go, okay. It makes you look like your price had no meaning in the first
place. I see. Yeah.
You know.
I see. But I haven't heard of anybody actually losing the job. If you're like, I could do it for $3,000, I wouldn't imagine the person, if they contacted you knowing they wanted your style, they wanted to work with you, them saying, oh, you're too expensive, never mind. They would just say, well, our budget says $500, and then you can negotiate and say, can you go up to $1,000? You know? Yeah. And unless you're really hard to get along with, they're not going to just step back and say, you know, we don't want to work with you.
Yeah, I agree.
You can work something.
It was a perception that I had when I was starting out. And I've heard that in a lot of students as well. Well, I'd be afraid to ask for this because they might just completely cancel. But I think that's a good point.
But you got to realize that there's other things that you can negotiate besides the money. And I think that's an important thing for students to realize as well. You can change the usage rights. You can change, if it's a book project, the big thing that I push for is the lower they offer, the higher I'm going to ask for on the return when you're getting your royalties. And that's a great way to negotiate, because you're saying, hey, I want to work with you. I'm willing to accept this lower than average price. Just compensate me on the back end. And that way it's a win-win. If the book sells, they're also making money, and it's sort of a no-risk way for you to negotiate mm-hmm. that. The other thing that I like to negotiate when there's not a lot of money is I want full creative freedom, or put me on the cover. Or, I mean, there's so many things you can start to ask for if they don't have money.
Yeah, and if you're really entrepreneurial and you got a shop set up, you could say, well, I'd also like, 50 copies of the book. And then you could sell those copies in the shop, and or you could say, I'd like to have the rights to sell prints.
Yeah.
And you could have mm-hmm. that be another avenue to make money off of that illustration.
And that goes for full-time people too, by the way. That's a great way to negotiate when you're in there, for your once a year review and you're trying to get a salary bump. The company's like, they will always hold the purse strings. They're like, they don't want to bump it up. We're giving you as much as we can right now. Okay, well, give me some more time off, or give me a flexible schedule. Let me work at home. There's so many ways to negotiate outside of just that money realm.
Mm-hmm. So let me go to another question, which is, well, it's kind of the original question, but I want to kind of drill down a little bit more, which is the question that I hate the most, which is, what is your going rate? How much should I charge for this? Like, there is a magical price. So I want to visit that again. And in visiting that question, to me, there's really four reasons why someone would take an illustration job. And I think that if you think about it in this way, it will actually help you determine your price. Because I think a lot of illustrators, they really haven't spent a lot of time actually kind of looking inwards and trying to examine their own motivations. But the four reasons that I can think of that you would take a freelance assignment as an illustrator would be, obviously the first one would be compensation, the amount of money. And that's really what we've only been talking about, but there's three others. Another one would be recognition. I know of a few authors who they're independently wealthy. I know one whose husband is a corporate tax attorney, and I've been to her house, one of her houses, and it is a, by all accounts, a mansion. And, I don't think she's illustrating books for the money. I don't think that's right. What gets her up in the morning. So recognition would be one reason. Another one would be service, like, a friend or a family member asks you, hey, will you illustrate this for me? And you, or maybe there's a foundation that you want to support, some kind of a charity that you feel is a good cause and you want to mm-hmm. do it for that reason. Mm-hmm. And then the third one would be because you're really passionate about the subject matter, about the story. Mm-hmm. And those four things, money, recognition, service, and passion, those can all factor in. It doesn't mean it has to be one or the other. It can be one, and it can be, it can be any one of those by itself. Looks like we lost Lee's webcam.
Yeah, he had an internet problem, so it's just you and me for now, Will.
Oh, we could talk about Lee?
He fell out.
So anyway,
I was going to add another one. I was going to add a fifth one. And yeah. That one is, you might take the job and take it for less money because you want to have the relationship with the people or the company or something like that.
Oh, that's a good one. So in other words, just to kind of keep that, to develop that relationship for mm-hmm. future. Yeah.
Because I call considered that? Networking reasons.
For networking. I'm going to add that as a note.
Because I considered a job recently, even though it paid less, because I really wanted to work with that author.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, and I would have done it had I not been in the middle of this move. And I just couldn't swing working on that book while handling the move. But I really wanted to work with that author, and I knew that she was you know, well liked in the kidlit community.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted my name to be associated with that name. And so even though the pay wasn't going to be quite as good as normal, I knew it would elevate my status a little bit in regards to the publishing, in the publishing world.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one good reason. And I've taken other freelance jobs too, because I really wanted to work on that particular project or with those particular group of people. I did a couple of years ago, I did vehicle designs for Invader Zim, for the movie that they're making. It comes out in November.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted to work with Nickelodeon, with that team. And it was a little bit lower than my normal day rate, but I was like, this will be fun. This will be a cool portfolio piece. And it'll be fun to work with this team. And I like the project. And so I said yes to it.
Just for the relationship.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. I mean, the money was okay. It wasn't mm-hmm. the best, but more, it was more about the relationship. Yeah.
But you wouldn't have done it just for the relationship. So the money factored in as well.
Right.
Exactly. You would have done it for free.
No, not particularly, but right. That part of it was a factor in taking on the job. If it was a cartoon I didn't care about, and if it was a team of people that I didn't care about, the money wasn't worth it.
Right. I got you. Well, let me just put this forward, that I feel like you're like the going rate, or your rate, like you talked about your day rate, but Lee has a rate for how much he would do a children's book for, and I have a rate that I would do a children's book for, and they're probably different. My bottom line is probably different from Lee's and probably different from yours, Jake.
Mm-hmm.
You've had ultra first world problems. You've been getting a lot of money for your children's book advances, and I don't want to divulge that. If you want to, that's up to you, but I can tell everybody here that it's obscene how much Jake gets. And
not obscene.
I'm willing to work for less, and the reason for that is that the amount that I'm being offered is enough. Mm-hmm. It's a good compensation, I feel, for the work, and I also feel like the royalty that I'm getting has a real potential to pay off. It's a really, I guess you could say, standard average royalty. And if the book sells really well, I'm talking about my Bonaparte series right now. If they sell really well, then I'm along for the ride with the publisher and kind of a partner in that sense.
Right.
But I want to talk about the idea that your bottom line, everyone has a bottom line. Like Jake, you wouldn't do a children's book for, let's say it's a, you know, HarperCollins asks you to do a children's book, and and it's a full picture book. It's, you know, full 32 page picture book. You love the subject matter, but you wouldn't do it for a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And likewise, if you hated the subject matter, it didn't go against your morals or anything, but it was a dumb story.
Mm-hmm.
You hated it. You really weren't looking forward to it at all. I'm guessing that you would do it for a couple hundred thousand. You'd figure out how to do it, right?
Right.
So somewhere in there, you have a bottom line where you, if we came down on money,
mm-hmm.
Like, would you do it? Would you do that, the book that you hate, for 10,000?
We're going to figure this out right now.
Yeah, let's figure you out. We're going to do a full body.
I'll say this.
Scan on you.
We did a podcast. I think it was episode 9, How Much Will I Make in Illustration?
Yeah.
And I think we kind of covered that in there, like what an illustrator could make for a children's book.
Right.
Did you want to go over that again?
Are you trying to avoid the question here?
I don't want to, listen, I don't think it's this particular, well, we started out talking about how we got to talk about our numbers. Everybody's got to talk about our numbers. I will say this, though. I don't know if it's fair to my agent for me to.
Okay, that's fine. That's a good point.
Right.
What
about you, Will?
Let's do me. Since I'm totally fair game. What's good for the goose, good for the gander. Okay.
No, I will say this. What is, if you're starting out, what is going to be a children's book advance if it's your first book?
Five to 12.
Yeah. And so I'm much quite a bit higher than that, but not as high as Jake. But let's just say this for me, and I can see why avoiding numbers might be a good thing too, specifically. But
I will say this: if you want to know how much you should be charging for a children's book, shoot me an email and we can have this conversation. But I don't want to just broadcast it out there for, you know, the ne'er-do-wells to take that information and do whatever they want.
Whatever they want with that. So let's say I make less than $50,000 per advance. I'll even say less than $40,000 for an advance.
You're just slumming it.
I'm slumming it down there. but let me just say this. My bottom line is lower than, and I think everyone's is lower than what you're agreeing. If you agree to do something for a price, that means your bottom line is actually lower than the price you agreed on. Uh-huh. Most likely, right?
Yeah.
It's hard to get right to the dollar in Deutschmark. So my contention is that also that your bottom line will fluctuate at different times. So we talked about Lee and how well-fed he is and manicured and all that and taken care of. But there's been times where I've had more money and times where I've had less money and then back to more money and then, mm-hmm. you know, where I've had a lot of work and then a little bit of work. And to me, your bottom line is constantly going up and down. Just because you made, let's say, $30,000 on an advance last year, if you don't have any work coming in and, you know, maybe you have some financial needs that sprung up where you are going to lose your house, you're going to lose your car, desperate times are mm-hmm. going to hit if you don't have money coming in and someone offers you half of what you previously worked for, I think most people are going to say yes.
Yes.
They're going
to
take it.
There is a risk there as well. And this has happened to me before where I was in this situation. It wasn't dire, but it was like, I got to figure out money for the next 6 months. You know, I'll take this job. Mm-hmm. It's less than I should, but you know, nothing else is coming on the horizon. Take it, sign contract. Then another job comes in for the full,
yeah.
you know, what I usually make. And it's like, I can't take it because I've already agreed to this one. So what's the advice there? Get a crystal ball, a time travel machine. That's really helpful. No, I think that the best advice there is make the best decision you can with the information you have at the time and don't feel bad for, you know, what you learn with hindsight, you know?
Yeah, but you're also talking about coulda, shoulda, wouldas. I mean, mm-hmm. at this time in your life, you need money, you have a job offer, they're offering you less and saying, this is our, you know, max budget. Or maybe they don't offer your budget. Maybe they don't offer you a budget. Maybe they're asking you to bid on the job. And so in my world, let's say the job you think the client might pay, let's say it's a smaller job and you think the client might pay as much as $3,000 or $4,000, but you also think, man, they might only have $1,000, you know, mm-hmm. would I be willing to do this work? Does it fulfill the recognition? Does it fulfill my passion? Does it fulfill networking? And does it, you know, I'm basing this on the money only at this point. Is $1,000, will I be happy to get $1,000 for doing this amount of work? And if the answer is yes, that might be your bottom line. Then you have to work back from that. Would I be happy doing this for $800?
There's another factor.
Well, so ultimately, is the point that you're trying to... I've been here for a while. I'm just listening to you guys go back and forth.
I have one other point I want to make, so don't forget that.
Write it down or you'll forget.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true. Type it up. The point you're trying to make is your bottom line changes based on a number of factors. Right.
Your hunger.
Is that what you're saying? Yeah, your hunger, your current situation, and all that stuff. Yeah, sure.
And your bottom line can go up the other way too, where you're like, I used to work for that, and now I'm flushed with work. You know, I got it in here.
I mean, if you've ever tried to hire a contractor, they work in the same way. I mean, anybody who gets their income in an inconsistent way works that way. If you've tried to hire a contractor and they're busy, well, guess what? Your bid's going to be real high if you try to get them. And if they haven't worked forever, that's why it's good if you're doing home projects, schedule your contractors in the fall, because all of their work typically goes away in fall and late fall, early winter, and you can get rates for a lot cheaper. So the bottom line for them changes based on need.
Have you guys, before you bring in yours, Jake, have both of you guys ever charged 3 or 4 times what you thought the client was willing to pay because you had a lot of work?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because you didn't necessarily want to do it. It was going to cramp your style. Mm-hmm. I've done the same thing. I've thrown out a number. Now, the follow-up question to that is, have you ever gotten the job after you threw out this really crazy high number thinking you wouldn't get it?
Yes. And rarely does the money equal the satisfaction of doing a job you don't want to do. So now I've changed my tune a little bit with that. I would have to be really desperate to do a job that I don't want to do. There has to be some kind of interest there.
About 4 years ago, 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, I did a job for a pharmaceutical company, which shall not be named.
It happened.
Why?
I knew this story was coming.
Oh. Anyway, I donated 3 months of my life to a company that was soulless and that tried to destroy my creative spirit. And they did it successfully. They destroyed me for just a little bit of time, but they paid so much money. And that's why. And so I had thrown out that huge number. And
it was 3 or 4 times what you.
Well, for the summer, for that summer, I got $65,000. For that,
it's not bad.
Job, which was
not too shabby.
No, it was great money, but it was, even after it was over, you know, I was back and forth like, well, it allowed us to do this, but man, that's you know, like it was just, and there was some emotional abuse too that came along with it for good measure, you know.
Wait, emotional abuse?
Oh yeah, they were pissed off. There was all kinds of stuff going on.
And you're dumb, Will Terry.
Yeah,
and
you're not that great as an artist. So don't think we're happy with the job that you did. I mean, just really dumb stuff that went along. Yeah.
So I have 2 points. First point is this: the other thing that we've talked about, all the things you can kind of like these dials that you can like adjust to get just the right. Like you can ask for less money, but you can get, you know, you can work with the people you want to work with. Or you can, you know, own the copyright, or you can ask for a higher royalty on the back end. Another thing you could play with too is your style and the amount of actual work you're going to put into the project. Mm. So there's some projects where they wanted to pay less than what I normally charge, but I told them, okay, well, I can do it in this simpler style. Or even if I don't tell them that, I could do it in a way where it's less work on my end. But it still offers, you know, it still gets the job done, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's another factor you could play with. So, like, I have a handful of styles that I work in, and one is render intensive. It just takes a lot of time to do. And one is more graphic and more linear, and it doesn't take as long. And so sometimes I'll say, I can do this job if I can do it in this easier, faster style. Mm.
That's good.
And they'll say, yeah, we don't mind. That's fine. We just need some artwork.
Hopefully, you know? They were already looking at that style, and they're like, well, that's exactly what we wanted. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah. So
I did the same thing. I did some stuff for Amazon. Probably shouldn't have thrown out the client name. But anyway, the rights were terrible, and the jobs weren't good either. And so I just did it in a 3-color, flat color style that is nothing like what I normally do. And it was fine. It fit their needs, fit my needs, and we both walked away happy.
The other thing I was going to talk about is we've been talking all about how you can work it and negotiate it and figure it out yourself. The other thing, this changes when you have an agent or you have a representative.
If they're good.
Yes, if they're good. Even if they're, don't use them if they're bad. Okay, this all changes if you have good agent or good representation. Because they know the landscape. They've negotiated 10 contracts that week before they've done yours. so they know what everybody's making. Mm-hmm. They know what is on the table and they know what people are paying. And when it comes to you, they could say, hey, this job, they're asking for 20,000. Honestly, I think we get 30. So I'm going to go back and see if we could do 30.
Yeah.
And that takes a load off of you. They also take 15% or 30% depending on the job. But I found for me, when you get into a long-term relationship with an agent, it's less about that 50% and more about this overall career that they're building with you. Because they know that you're an investment for them as well. And that even though you're getting $10,000 for this first job, in 10 years, it could be 50,000. And that means they're making 5,000 off of you for the same amount of work that they did for you at the beginning. And you're going to be making more money for the same amount of work that you're doing at the beginning as well. So that's another thing to look into is figure out an agent, find an agent, find a relationship. If it's not working after one or two projects, fire them, go find someone better, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that could be a perfectly good and valid way to work. And everybody I know who's doing really well in children's book publishing has some sort of representation for them. It's just, unless I would say there's one guy who doesn't, he had one, he fired them, or terminated the relationship. I don't think it was anything bad or anything, but he just decided I could do this myself. And it was the reason he decided that is because he actually lived in New York City, lived in the city, and could and just hung out in that crowd. He knew all the editors, he knew all the art directors, he'd have lunch with them, he had coffee with them, and he knew what was going on and he knew what he was dealing with. I live 700 miles removed from that scene. I don't know what the word on the street is. I don't know who's talking to who. I don't know which editor is leaving what publisher and going to another one. And my agent does, because she works there, she lives there, and she knows all that stuff. And so she's able to say, hey, we shouldn't take this book project to this publisher. We should take it to this publisher because I know that, I know that they're restructuring at this other place and it's not a good time to take this project to them. Mm-hmm. So that's another factor as well.
I think there's really two things that we're in this that we're really talking about. We're talking about on one end not leaving a ton of money on the table if the client's willing to pay double, triple, quadruple what you mm-hmm. are thinking about asking. And on the other side, we're talking about what are we talking about? Not losing the job, right?
Yeah.
So not leaving money on the table. And maximizing. I guess it's one of the same things. We're trying to hit that sweet spot. Mm-hmm. And the thing that's pretty much, I think, a given is that the further along in your career you are, and the more work you have, the more you're going to maximize what the client has easily, as we've talked about, right? Mm-hmm. Because like Lee is, you know, he's established. He's going to demand pretty much top dollar, and so are you. And
so are you, Will Terry. Don't
give yourself
short shrift.
So, well, I'm only talking about myself as much, but yeah. So the more established you are in your career, the less money you're going to leave on the table because you're going to have the confidence, and you're going to have the track record, and you're going to have the body of work, and probably a lot of other work coming in to where you're going to be able to say, I need this much, and if you don't have it, I'm sorry, but I can't do it. Mm-hmm. On the other end, if you're starting out, you're one of the side casualties is you're probably, in order to get work, you're probably going to have to leave money on the table. Because if you say, like you said with your day rate, if you say, all I can do this, if you throw out a number, if someone asks you to do a children's book, and you say, I can do it for 6,000, and they say, great, let's get going. In your mind, you're forever wondering, well, did they have 10,000?
Mm-hmm.
Did they have 15,000? What did I actually leave there? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And
But one of the things you're talking about there is need in terms of where you're at in your career. And I think the need for what we have is a lot different than the need for somebody who's early. And that should be factored in too, by the way, is when somebody's new, they need published work. That's what they need more than money. And so the currency is different for them. The currency actually is the published work. That's the more valuable thing. And so that has to be kept in your mind. If you're like a new person and you're just starting out and you're like, oh man, they're paying me $500 and they should be paying me $5,000. Well, if you don't have a lot of stuff on your resume that's been published, or you know, if you're working with real clients, you have to get that stuff. And it's more valuable than money at that stage, even though it sucks to take a lesser rate. There's different needs at different parts of your career. And so that's another factor aside from the cost value that factors into it. I don't need published work anymore. So I can walk in. So more of my focus would be on how creative is it or how much does it pay? Whereas a new person doesn't really need to think of that. So you've got to keep all those factors in the discussion.
Which brings me to my final question. Would you ever give the advice that a new up and coming illustrator should ever work for free? See, I tricked you into that response, Lee, and now you have to say yes.
No, but I have an asterisk.
No asterisk.
There's an asterisk. You should only work for free if it is a pro bono client and they aren't making money.
But you yourself said, you want me to run the videotape back?
I said all those things need to be factored in.
You said sometimes getting published work is more important than money.
Than the amount of money, but doesn't mean that it's an all. There's a gray area there, and you cannot work for free.
I think it depends on the project, right? So sometimes there's what is it? We'll pay you in recognition, or what's the currency? We'll pay you in
fame and fortune, notoriety.
Not fame. What's the word? Exposure.
Exposure.
Yeah. We could pay you exposure.
Oh, God.
And I will say this, though. An artist's biggest problem, I don't think, is money. An artist's biggest problem is obscurity, right? Like, you have to make a splash. You have to get on people's radar. You have to do something. And what does that mean? Maybe that means sometimes doing something for free, not necessarily for another client, but maybe it's for yourself, you know.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And so, you know, that's kind of a trick question to mm-hmm. bring that on you, Lee.
But no, I'm glad you did, because it does involve those number of factors. I still say never work.
So, and I think some people, so here's what I oppose. I oppose I'll see prominent illustrators telling young students what they should never do. And I think the better thing for a teacher to do is to lay out the pros and cons and say, if you choose to work for free, here are the negative things that can happen. And here are the positive things that can happen. And you have to make that decision yourself. But I am deathly afraid of maybe not deathly, maybe that's hyperbolic, but I'm
sickly. I'm sickly afraid.
Yeah, it makes me sick to hear veterans tell students what they should never do. Because I've had experiences where I worked for a magazine called Delaware Lawyer. I did get paid $100. I would have done it for free at the time. It was my first year out of school. The job that I did for them won an art director's award for an organization in New York City, which I actually tried to go to the thing, but it was during the blizzard of 96 and never made it up to New York. But more importantly, it got me, the person who saw that, the art director who saw that, got me a job with, M&M Mars that paid somewhere right around $40,000. So that $100 image helped land a crazy good job.
Right. And
I've had that happen a bunch of times where I've done stuff like that. Now on the flip side, there are a lot of clients who will purposely try to take advantage of artists by promising them exposure, and I get all that, and there's a lot of truth to that. But I think you're right, Jake, in that if your biggest problem is getting to be known in the beginning, you've got to be willing to fight, claw, scrape, scrap, do almost anything to beef up your portfolio, to get that portfolio out there of what looks like published work, not student portfolio stuff. Because it's very, when we look at portfolios, we can see a student portfolio a mile away versus like, who'd you do this for? This looks, you know, oh, you're already working. Okay, got it. And if I'm an art director, that's going to matter to me probably more than, or just as much as the work itself is, oh, you've already been doing this, so you're not going to make all the rookie mistakes because you're already working for people. And
right. I was just going to add to that too. It's like, if you get a job offer, hey, we need you to do this. Sorry, we can't pay you in money, but we can pay you in exposure. And that happens from time to time. Look at what kind of exposure they're offering. It might be that they have inroads to, I don't know, Industrial Light and Magic, and you're a concept artist and you want to get on their radar. Okay. Mm-hmm. That might be worth it to enter a contest and show your artwork, because you know an art director at Industrial Light and Magic is going to see your work. But if the exposure is like, well, we'll post it on our Instagram account and everybody, you know, our 10,000 followers will see it, you might be better off posting it yourself on your own Instagram account and not doing the job for them, but doing your own particular work or doing your own particular thing and getting that exposure yourself. Right now we're in this amazing opportunity for artists where you could post on Twitter, you could post on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. And if you have something unique and interesting, having 10,000 people see it is not a hard thing at all.
Right? Yeah.
So think about what kind of exposure, if it's the right kind of exposure. And a lot of times people are like, don't enter this contest. It's a bad contest. They're going to use your work for free. If you're in a position where you need your artwork seen by the right person, it might be worth it to do that. But do your homework and figure it out. I'd say 9 times out of 10, it might be better off to spend your time doing it yourself, posting it online, letting the internet judge whether it's something that should be shared or not, and then turning around and doing that again. I keep telling people, you want to get on people's radar and see if your artwork is really, up to stuff to be getting published and getting work. I'd say to them, take the 7 Harry Potter books and do your version of the covers.
Mm.
Take a 6 months, do one a month, take 7 months, do one a month, and do your version of the covers, release them once a month, one at a time, spend, 40, 60, 80 hours on each cover, do a really good job. And I guarantee if you have a cool, unique style, like if you did it, Will Terry, take your unique style and did that, you would, I'm sure you'd be like, get on the radar of art directors who weren't already familiar with your work. If you're young, just starting out, like that's a great way. I mean, the headline writes itself, basically. Check out this artist, take, crazy new take on Harry Potter. And if you see that headline, are you going to click on it or are you going to pass if you're a Harry Potter fan or if you're in KidLit? You're going to click on it and you're going to want to see. So you got to think creatively like that. And that could definitely lead to some art director seeing that, calling you up and saying, hey, we like what you did. We like this project that you had. And would you be willing to do a book cover for us?
Yeah. Keep in mind that a lot of people work for free too. Like there are a lot of internships that are not paid, where there's a way to, where there's hundreds of people fighting over that position to be able to essentially work for free. Musicians, actors, and writers that are trying to get known are essentially working for free. If you're a writer and you're trying to write a book and you're hoping to get it published, you're working for free until you sell it later on. You're also, I put those people in the entrepreneurial category because they're, they're tinkering, they're doing, you know, they're creating their own product, and they want to use a publisher or label if you're a musician to promote that product. So it is a little different than someone coming to you and asking you to work for free. But yeah, a lot of good things can happen from working for free, and a lot of negatives can also happen. So, you know, the people that are warning you not to work for free, I think are, they have valid concerns, as much as I hate to admit it, you know, Lee.
All right. Should we wrap it up?
You got anything else, Lee? I don't want to misrepresent you.
Yeah. All right, I'll take us out.
I do disagree with the free thing.
Should you join a contest, even if there's no payment for it?
Yes, as long as the contest, the people that are putting on the contest do not own the content of the work that you submit. That's the big thing to watch out for, and that is everywhere. I remember when I was teaching at school, they had this contest that was put, like, there was flyers all over our school that was put on by the school. Mm-hmm. And part of the rules was that they were going to get to own the work. And so then I put up a bunch of posters saying, you should not enter this contest. And I got in a lot of trouble because that was my employer. But you shouldn't do it. You got to be careful, and you got to read the fine print. I love contests as a way to just build up portfolios and stuff like that, but just make sure that they don't own the work.
Good call. All right, everybody. Thank you for joining us. 3-Point Perspective is made possible by svslearn.com, where becoming a great children's book illustrator starts. And your hosts here have been Will Terry. This was his topic today. He's the one turning the screws on me and Lee. find his work at willterry.com and check him out on Instagram at willterryart. We also have Lee White, based in Tennessee, not Kentucky.
Corn-tucky.
Find his work at leewhiteillustration.com and check him out on Instagram at leewhiteillo. And I'm Jake Parker. You can find my work at mrjakeparker.com, and you can check me out on Instagram at Jake Parker. Podcast is edited by Alex Sugg. You can find his work at alexsugg2gs.com, and show notes by Tanner Garlick. Go check out his artwork at tannergarlickart.com. And if you like this episode, please share it around. We'd love it if you subscribe to it on iTunes or whatever podcast device that you use. And wherever you do subscribe, please leave a review. We'd love to hear what you think, and we'd love for others to see what you think of our podcast as well. So if you're wanting to join on this particular discussion, we actually have a thread for it on the svslearn.com forum, where we've posted this episode in its own thread where people can talk about it and add their input and thoughts as well. So chime in over there and let us know your thoughts. And that's it for today. Thank you, and we'll see you guys next time.